This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 193 for Wednesday, May 25th, 2016. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and sometimes even websites. Joining me tonight for the first time in a really long time, too long, as we were saying pre-show, Adam Christensen is here from MacCast, the iOS show, and the Mac show, which is new to me, on British Network. Welcome. How's it going?
It's going great.
Man.
Yeah, doing well.
I feel like it's probably been a year. were you on last season?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I came on one time. I can't for the life of me remember what we talked about, but hey.
Yeah, I know that it happens during Game of Thrones. I tend to flip everything on its head and try to pull in extra people I don't tend to have a chance to podcast with. Something about Game of Thrones tends to pull people out of the woodwork. They're itching to talk about it. And the good news is by Wednesday, usually people have seen it and the spoilers are kind of out there if they haven't. So, just in case anybody is out there listening, if you haven't watched this episode of Game of Thrones from this past Sunday, you should bail because Adam and I are going to get into it and there's really nothing we can talk about without really spoiling things. But before we get into all that, happy towel day.
Is that today?
That's today. It's the Douglas Adams end of the world. Make sure you bring a towel.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't realize that was today because apparently it is also Star Wars birthday today.
Is it really?
To some, yeah. Huh. I haven't verified it though, so I'm going to throw that out there. Just saying that's what people have been posting on Twitter, and I'm assuming it means the original release date in 1978 or 9 of Star Wars, the original film.
Yeah, I don't know for sure. I mean, I guess we could always check the internet.
I can check IMDb.
Yeah.
I'll do that while you do your thing.
Okay. For me, it's always been, I feel like it's, May the 4th always sticks in my head as the Star Wars day, which I know
they call that Star Wars day. Yeah, no. Yeah, May 25th, 1977 was the release date of Star Wars Episode 4.
Wow. So we're 2016, so we're almost at 60 years? No, 30 years. Yeah, almost at 40 years. That's crazy.
Yep. I think that's like next year, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That was me doing
math.
Yeah,
so we're at 39 years. So I think 40 years is the thing. And I think that may have something to do with, I don't know, you know, Disneylands are building out, you know, their Star Wars lands. And I would imagine maybe they're trying to gun for having stuff ready for the 40th anniversary of Star Wars. It'd be good timing.
Yeah, well, they're certainly pushing a lot of fronts. I shared a link earlier this week on Facebook that as of September, Netflix is getting a lot of Disney content, and that includes Star Wars and Marvel.
Yep.
And you know, I'm hoping that applies across the border, because here in Canada we have an issue with, you know, some of the, or a lot of the content, at least a lot of the new content that you guys get that we don't have. But the cool thing is we often get BBC series. So there's a lot of happy Doctor Who fans in Canada. Same with Downton Abbey and stuff like that. We tend to get that stuff really quickly. I'm not sure whether it's just the Commonwealth thing or whether it's the fact that our copyright laws are similar to Britain's, but we tend to get that stuff a lot earlier.
Yeah.
And of course the Netflix original series, which is mostly what I watch, that stuff is just released worldwide, which is nice. But I'd be quite happy to get more Marvel stuff on Netflix and have it stick around. Like I'd love to be able to not have to worry about grabbing a Blu-ray or a DVD to go watch the Avengers and just be able to like, 1080p, I'll just stream it. Sweet. Done.
I'll buy all that stuff on iTunes, but I think I had heard the Star Wars thing, or the Disney thing is just new stuff though. So it's like from 2016 forward.
Interesting.
They're still going to have access to other stuff apparently, but it's not exclusive. So I think it's a kind of exclusive for the new stuff on Netflix.
And they might roll it through the vault as they used to do with the DVDs and stuff. Because right now...
Don't get me started on the vault.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Look, as an animator and as a fan of Disney, believe you me, I still have a couple of DVDs that I bought and have not watched strictly because they were available and I knew they wouldn't be for long. So things like my copy of Snow White and I think I have one other classically animated, maybe Brother Bear, that are still in the plastic. I haven't watched them because they just I just needed to get them because I knew they were going away. Right now on Netflix in Canada, I've got Fox and the Hound, Aristocats, Tangled, which I watched recently. That's actually a lot better than I remember. there's a couple of other ones that were recent. The ones that were not so great in terms of like box office hits. Treasure Planet.
Right.
And Atlantis. I like Atlantis. Atlantis is one of my favorites.
Notre Dame is in there too.
Oh, is it really?
At least here in the States.
Also, not a big financial hit for them. Same with Pocahontas. All of them are good. I mean, I'm so technically mesmerized by animation that I can usually forgive a Disney film for not being, crazy over the top like Mermaid or Aladdin or Beauty and the Beast. They just announced there's a trailer now for a live action Beauty and the Beast. I guess they're doing that with all of their films. The music was tugging at the heartstrings, but I'm not sure how that's going to pan out. These days though, with special effects, man, seeing a beast completely CG would be pretty cool.
Yeah. Now you got me thinking, because I saw that trailer and I was surprised by who's in the lead role. Now I blanked on it for a second.
Oh, the who plays Belle?
Emma Watson is Belle.
Oh, wow.
I immediately recognized her voice. They don't really show her much in the trailer.
No.
But yeah, I immediately recognized her voice. So.
That's interesting.
Hermione Granger as
Yeah. Belle. I suppose she really hasn't done anything.
Oh yeah, she's done some pretty serious stuff.
Oh. Hmm.
Oh. Yeah, she I'm trying to think. She did that I'm going to blank on the movie. She's been doing some drama stuff, I thought, and then she was in This Is the End.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
If you're into that sort of movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty funny.
I think I remember her in the trailer or something like that and laughing at that.
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing I tend to see on Netflix when I'm really, really, really bored. I don't always go down specifically to check that out. Although, I mean, while we're talking about Netflix, I did watch a very good movie on Netflix that I had missed when it was out and I had heard many good things about it. But I watched Her over the weekend. The one where Joaquin Phoenix and he falls in love with an AI. And
I got in trouble with my wife for that one.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what is that creepy thing that you're watching?
It was definitely creepy. I really appreciated the design of the movie, like all of the production design and stuff. It was this kind of like pseudo future, but everything was a little bit retro as well. And it really sold it. Like you never really once questioned what was going on. And it's funny because I remember this about Scarlett Johansson, who does the voice of the AI in the film, because I've seen her in a couple of romantic comedies, one about We Bought a Zoo or something with Matt Damon. And there's a couple of other things that she's been in. And when she's not in the Avengers and she's not like shouting, commands and doing all this actiony stuff, she has a very soft, very specific kind of voice. But when you can't see her at all, and you get to just listen to her through like his headphones and stuff, it's a really intimate movie. In some ways, it's very awkward, but it's I found it really interesting and it's super well acted. And a small cast. Something that I really enjoy. Did you see Ex Machina?
Yes.
Yeah. So I really like that too.
I enjoyed that movie.
Yeah, which is why I thought that I would give Her a try. I mean, wildly different films.
Right.
Yeah. like one is actually really touching and the other one is just completely scary on all fronts.
Weird, yeah.
Yeah. What did you think of Her?
I enjoyed it. I watched it a long time ago. I thought it was very interesting. The whole take on it. Yeah, I quite enjoyed it, but just weird. That's what I mostly remember about it.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely some awkward moments with Joaquin Phoenix,
yeah.
Theodore, his character. I really enjoyed, and I almost didn't recognize her at first, Amy Adams.
Mm-hmm.
In it, she was really good too. And I love her. Yeah, and I love movies that don't smack you over the head. Like, it takes you almost the first two acts to figure out what Amy Adams does for a living. Like, mm-hmm. she's a documentary person, but then it turns out she's a game developer, like a video game developer. And
right.
That kind of stuff. I like when it's not like the first three sentences out of the character's mouth is like, well, this is who I am and what I do. You know, he's like, eh. I find it a little bit tedious, but yeah, no, that was a really good movie. I would highly recommend it to anybody. It's one of those things I kind of want to see if I can get my parents to watch it just to see what they think. Like, I just let them know that it's different, but I mean, I don't know if they'll stay on board for the whole movie. I'm curious what they would think about something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Emma Watson, the serious movie, and I haven't seen it. It's called The Colony.
Oh.
She did it, I think, last year, and it's about this real Chilean, like, commune cult kind of thing called Colonia Dignidad. And I don't know if it's based on a true story or not, but basically her boyfriend gets abducted into this colony, and I think she goes in to kind of get him out or something like that. Like, nobody has ever really escaped from this colony.
Mm.
So, I don't know. Some weird Chilean thing, and they've had investigations by the Chilean government, and I guess it has a really interesting history, but
yeah.
That's what she's been up to.
Wow.
You know, movies like that. And it was pretty highly rated too, so I don't know if I'll ever see it, but that was kind of one of her more recent things.
There's so much that just goes underneath my radar. Like, I don't have cable TV, so I don't see commercials. So if it's not in front of a YouTube video or something that, like, the podcasting community that I'm listening to or following on in a group on Facebook is talking about, which basically means if it's not Star Wars, Marvel, or Harry Potter, I don't hear about it. Or Warcraft, I guess, would be the other one. So a lot of films like her, I had heard about it, I think, on a podcast about somebody that had watched it, and they were just, you know, gushing about it. And I thought, man, I feel like I heard that somewhere in pop culture. I was surprised when I looked it up. It's from like 2014.
Yep.
I thought it was a lot more recent, but I guess, you know,
time goes by.
Oh,
I do
man.
That all the time too. I'll find stuff on Netflix. It's like, oh, this is finally out. It's like, oh, that came out in 2011, 2012.
Oh. Yeah. And you're like, oh, whatever. That's really recent. And you're like, oh no, wait, that's like 4 years ago. Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of more Netflix stuff, I spent probably about an hour and a half on Monday night talking with Brockett Vola, who's usually a guest on this show, about the Daredevil Netflix series. We covered both season one mm-hmm. and season two, and we talked about it on his show, Biggest Fan. So I just thought I'd throw that out there before we kind of get into the Game of Thrones stuff. I always really enjoy being on Biggest Fan. They do some really cool stuff where they kind of choose a thing and then become a biggest fan of that thing for as long as it takes to kind of do the research. And then they do a podcast about it. So it's usually Brockett and Kyle. Kyle Ferguson, who's actually been on the show before too, and he's on Into the Nexus and a bunch of other stuff. But then Brockett has done some stuff with his wife recently as well, and they're both very, very funny people. So it's worth checking out for anybody that's, you know, in that Disney, Marvel, Netflix kind of universe. And I don't know, we actually got into some interesting extended universe talk, and I hadn't seen the post about Disney and Netflix at that point. We were talking pre that announcement.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious to have Brockett on this show again and touch base on it and see, like, well, whether our theories are kind of on par, because we were discussing the possibility of, like, the Netflix universe colliding with the Marvel extended universe and all that kind of stuff. And I think if they can pull off Spider-Man in Civil War, I think they could pull off Daredevil in Infinity War, even if
it's not
just
even
a cameo.
Just pulling it off. That was a highlight for me.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No,
I don't know where they found that actor or what else he's done, but he pulled it off perfectly. It was like better than any other prior version of Spider-Man in my mind by leaps and bounds.
Yeah. I enjoyed Andrew Garfield as Spider-Man. The movies mm-hmm. weren't great, but him as an actor and the wit and the cockiness that he brought to it, I thought, yeah, it's cool. That's a good older Spider-Man. Like, that's a cool kind mm-hmm. of 20s Spider-Man. But I don't remember the actor's name either from Civil War, but he nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely nailed it. I didn't realize I was reading the Slack chat for the Citadel Cafe earlier, and Lou was saying that I guess a lot of the Spider-Man stuff is the extended things that they had to go back and shoot. Like that was added in later. So as seamless and as well as it worked, it was actually extra. Like it wasn't part of the original
thing. Well, they had to wait on the whole Sony thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Had to wait on the deal with Sony. So
yeah, hey. Craziness. Right on. Well, I think it's probably about that time that we dive into the Winter is Coming segment for Game of Thrones Season 6. As I mentioned at the top of the show, if you have not seen this latest episode 5, The Door of Season 6 from Game of Thrones, you should bail. Right now, run away. Okay, everybody's gone. The plot summary for this episode starts with Sansa meeting Peter Baelish, who offers the support in the Vale and tells her that Brendan Tully is getting an army at Riverrun. She refuses his help. Jon and Sansa leave Castle Black to gather support from the other northern houses. In Braavos, Arya trains with the Waif and is given a second chance to prove her loyalty by killing an actress. In the Iron Islands, Euron Greyjoy wins the King's Moot despite confessing to killing Balon, causing Yara and Theon to flee. Daenerys learns, like, where am I going? There's so many different places. Daenerys learns about Jorah's grayscale. It's actually quite a short scene. At Meereen, the Red Priestess, Kinvara meets Tyrion and Varys and offers to support Daenerys. And beyond the wall, Bran learns that the White Walkers were created by the Children of the Forest to protect themselves from man. Bran's unaccompanied vision causes him to be touched by the Night's King. I didn't realize that was his name. Making the cave vulnerable, the Night's King, along with the White Walkers and hordes of wights, ambush the cave, killing the Three-Eyed Raven, several children of the forest, Bran's direwolf Summer, Darn, and eventually Hodor. Boo earns. My general thoughts for this week was, I was just so frustrated because I had work to do Monday morning. It involved going on the internet. And I mean, it's less than 12 hours because I was up at like 6 a.m. my time. So like Game of Thrones is still airing in some places, probably. I got spoiled on the Hodor thing. It was not any really one person per se, but it was a bunch of people mentioning a few things. You know, one person is all Game of Thrones, sad face. So right away, you know, someone dies. You're like, God damn it. You know,
someone always dies.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Let's be fair.
You know, that's true.
But someone you cared about, probably.
Somebody you cared about and somebody that made one of my male friends get teary died. So that narrows it down considerably. And then I had somebody else, everybody was hashtagging Hodor. And I was like, son of a, I don't understand why people can't just shut up.
Two and two together.
No, I just don't. I don't know why people can't just hold their tongues just for 24 hours. Like, I watch it over breakfast, but I had things to do first thing, and then I was going to eat breakfast a little bit later, and I was like, well, lesson learned. From now on, I'm watching Game of Thrones at 5 a.m. Monday morning. So that was frustrating. So I guess
I forgot last week to watch it on Sunday, and. Mm-hmm. I didn't even realize till Monday night. I'm like, oh yeah, I still have the watch. And luckily I hadn't, you know, I get so busy, I don't really pay much attention unless something went by on Twitter or something like that. But,
well, yeah. And that's the thing too, is that a lot of times you'll get like GIFs that autoplay on Twitter or
that's the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just,
the animated GIFs are killer.
Yeah. Cause I mean, like I mean, some people are careful about it. Some people will say, some people will say spoiler, or like they'll put a big bold letters, Game of Thrones spoiler. And so you can say, okay, sweet, I'm going to scroll by that and not look at that. But other times people just kind of throw it out there and they think they're being cute and they're not. So now that that's out there, how did you feel about that whole scene?
the ending scene.
Yeah, with Hodor and the attack on the cave and.
Right. I think I'm still at this point. I felt confused. Is really what it came down to. As far as the character dying, I thought it was handled really well, and it was probably time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously time within the line of the story. But at the same time, with the intermixing with the flashbacks and stuff like that, I'm still, I think, trying to mentally piece together what exactly I'm kind of seeing.
Yeah.
Because there's the timeline thing, right? So obviously we now know where his name comes from, but that's in the future from when he's been using that name for so long. So I don't quite think I get all those connections.
Yeah.
Maybe that's me being dumb.
No, what I got from it, and what's cool about Game of Thrones especially, is that they don't explain everything word for word. They kind of leave it up to you as to how you're going to interpret what you're seeing. And even in that scene, like, there's no other dialogue happening. Like, Bran's not saying anything.
Right.
I feel like at some point in one of the previous visions, and I don't remember exactly what happened, he said someone's name, like he yelled out father or something, and there was a pause. Like one of the people that wasn't supposed to be able to see him heard him or just felt something enough to stop. And so that kind of hinted that they could at least touch base with the past.
Yeah, or was it, I thought maybe it's the kind of thing, so, you know, Bran is having the visions, right, of Hodor, and there's a connection between Bran and Hodor, and I think in the flashback toward the end of it, right, is when he sort of becomes Hodor. So it's like, is it that connection between them is so strong, and he and Bran's been back to visit the past, you know, as I guess the now new Raven, and somehow imparted on, like, did he cause Hodor to become a Hodor for the explicit purpose of doing the task that he just did, you know, has it all been because of that, which sets up this weird cyclical loop in my mind.
Yeah, no, you definitely get into like time paradox territory for sure. I like how they handled it. Like my guess was that because of the intensity of what was happening in the present time with Bran still in the vision, that somehow that intensity was able to then affect Hodor, because Bran was both in the vision and, what do they call it? Walking in Hodor.
Was he still having the vision? It wasn't clear. Did they pull him out of it, or was he still?
No, he was still in it. No, his eyes were. It's hard to see, but his eyes were still glazed over in white, and he wasn't doing anything.
That was the vision that he was watching. So that even sort of more puts me in the theory that somehow his connection with Hodor caused Hodor to become Hodor, so that in the future he could protect him.
Yeah, because that's what I'm thinking. So we're seeing what Bran is seeing, but then Bran takes over Hodor's mind to move and get everybody out of the cave. And when he does that, that's when Hodor in the past can see Bran.
When Hodor dies is when he sort of collapses and becomes Hodor, which is just, that's the weird thing. That's when I'm having a hard time around.
Because they're shouting everything at him, of course, and it's very clear where he gets his name, and they're shouting, hold the door, and he just kind of, you know, basically it looks like to me, because he wasn't a green seer, Hodor's body in the past, his mind, wasn't able to handle what was happening, like a vision and being controlled, and it basically turned him into not a vegetable, but really gave him brain damage.
Yeah. Did you watch do you watch all the way through to the, when the creators talk about the show?
At the
very end, that hold the door thing came directly from George R. R. Martin.
Oh, wow.
And they said, like, when he told them, they were like, what? like blown away. So,
well, and the thing is, like, there's so little, I guess there's more recently, but up until the last season or two, there really wasn't a whole lot of like mystique and magic in the show, right? I mean, there's little bits here and there, a ghost thing or some shadow magic, but it's all very subdued until you get into the whites and the giants and the dragons start to be big and flying around. Then you start to really feel like it's a higher fantasy sort of world.
Well, and then you have the Faceless Men now, and you've got you know,
yeah,
Grayscale, and I mean, you've got all this stuff coming into play over the last couple seasons, and it's just building.
And then right away, Martin ups the ante. It's like, all right, time travel. that's the thing.
Well, I don't
know
if it's necessarily time travel as much as it's still mysticism, right? It's still sort of, it's almost like being a seer in reverse, right? Bran can go back and see the past, but I think he can see into the future too, right? Or no? Have we not seen that? I'm trying to remember if there's been visions of future events. Or
that sounds familiar. That sounds familiar, but I'm wondering if that's from the books at some point, and then they haven't gotten to that yet in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Or I certainly don't think we've seen the future. It's the only future stuff that we've heard about is Cersei and the witch that predicted her future.
Well, the Red Woman thought she saw the future, but she wasn't entirely apparently certain which future she saw.
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah, but
I think she got the wrong person.
Yeah, but we as viewers don't get to see that the same way we get to see what happens with Bran and his visions and stuff like that. So I'm not sure if that's coming through on the mic, but they found me.
Yeah, I know.
It's too late for me. Run for your lives. The joys of podcasting when it's warm in my apartment. I have to have the window open. So there are no sirens in Game of Thrones, at least not police car sirens. Potentially, like, sirens at sea, like mermaids and stuff. That would be kind of cool if they had that. But, unfortunately not. I found the attack on the Green Seer cave terrifying. Mm-hmm. It's like World War Z when the zombies are fast.
Yep.
These things are not kidding around. They remind me, it's a cross between zombies and the goblins from the Fellowship of the Ring when they come out of
totally
the woodwork,
like that. Yeah,
in like Moria.
The swarm, and they're on the roof and the ceiling and the walls and jumping and
And they do something quirky with the way that they film the actors. Like they must film them doing something and then speed it up and then intermingle or they film them going
sense
backwards.
Of urgency.
Like it's really weird. And then like in the Walking Dead series, when a zombie gets you, like there's biting and tearing and stuff, but it's not necessarily a frenzy. At least I haven't seen I've only seen the first few seasons. But in this, like when these whites get a hold of you, they just have little shivs and they're just like, kill them as fast as they can. It's like stab, 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 stab from like all different angles. And man, like it makes you like, oh God, that is not the way I want to go. Like, you know, blow me up or light me on fire and kill me instantly. But like,
well, yeah, I mean, and we kind of, you know, in the last season, at the end of the last season, we kind of saw what, you know, looked like the army moving forward, but this was a very different feel, right? It was very more animalistic. I mean, it wasn't just battling zombies. It was like, more kind of visceral, again, animal, like you think of a wolf pack or something like that kind of bearing down on you, almost.
Yeah, and I feel like I'm wondering if that kind of was meant to communicate the sense of urgency for the king, the Night's King. I feel like the Green Seers were potentially a threat because we haven't seen much that's able to really threaten them outside of Dragonglass. So I don't know. I'm kind of wondering whether him destroying the Three-Eyed Raven was like super important, and then trying to get Bran and end the line was something he was really adamant on doing.
He says, right?
Yeah.
I'm not, he's like, you're the Raven. What did he tell me? Not you're the Raven now, but basically he says, I'm not ready. And he's like, you are.
Yeah, you need to become me. Then this is it. You have to do it. Yeah. So I'm curious to see what's going to happen to Bran. I find it kind of funny that with all this power and these crazy whites flying all over the place, they didn't go around. They just, you know, I guess they couldn't maybe, but it felt kind of weird that Hodor was holding the door and that, is it Osha? I can't remember her name. The girl that runs away with Bran. She just hauls them away, but she gets away. Like there's nothing chasing them.
Right. Why didn't they go over? Well, I don't know how, I mean, they ran pretty far through that and I'm assuming they're backed up to a mountain, so
maybe
just a hill.
Maybe it's not physical. Like maybe the terrain is just not something they can get by. But I mean, it was only something I thought about after the fact. It wasn't something that dawned on me while I was watching it because it was a pretty intense scene.
Well, there's there's kind of lots of stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's another thing like that in the episode I'm sure we're going to get to that I want to ask about.
So. Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, before we move on, we are down one more dire wolf, unfortunately. And I felt a pang of sadness just as much for Summer as I did for Hodor.
Yeah,
that whimper that they do.
I might even felt more.
Yeah, that whimper that they do for when the direwolf goes down, and you've already seen them stab one of the children of the what they call the children of the forest.
Right,
like you know how brutally they're getting murdered, and then this wolf is getting the same treatment. He's like, oh damn it! And now that's the thing. Now there's going to be a zombie direwolf.
Is there?
Well, because all these things come back to life, right? Right. Isn't that how they work?
Yeah, I would think so. I don't know. I think the reason I felt a little more for the wolf than Hodor was, at least Hodor died for obviously a purpose. I mean, mm-hmm. there was the whole connection. There was like a reason why that happened. There, you know, it was a reason for being where it wasn't just like, oh, there goes another dire wolf.
Yeah, and if Summer had gotten away, at least then Bran would have had some sort of protection. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like that would have been cool. Plus now, like, because Bran's been doing a lot of walking in the wolf skin. So, like, now what does he do? I don't know. Yeah, I was disappointed
with
that.
I mean, this gives him a reason to go back south, right?
I guess, yeah.
To move back south.
Yeah. So there's only two dire wolves left. There's Nymeria from Arya that's ran away, and Ghost. That's it. We're down to two.
Yeah.
So what was the other scene that you thought was a little bit odd that you wanted to mention?
Oh, the whole picking of the new King of the Iron Islands.
Yeah. Okay. So what was it about that kind of rubbed you the wrong way?
No, just the how the ceremony went was interesting to watch.
Yeah.
So they basically drown the guy, right? Like, you're going to be our new king. Let's drown you. You have to swallow seawater into your lungs, and we're going to drag you out and haul you out and throw you on the shore. And hopefully you wake back up.
Yeah.
Like, how do they have kings ever? Like,
yeah.
It was so unrealistic to me. Like, they drown the guy. Right? That's apparently part of the ceremony.
Yes. Yeah. No, I remember that in the books too. And it's less obvious when you're reading it than when you're watching it. It's like, yeah, no, he's not breathing. Like, yeah,
And part of the thing says, you know, breathe the sea into your lungs, and you see him, you know, take a giant breath of seawater, basically.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing with the drowned god is that, they, you know, I think that's how they anoint kings. It's their way of saying, well, you're worthy. If you died, then...
They just all miraculously, you know, wake up and spit out the seawater?
I don't know if there's ever been...
Maybe I don't know enough about drowning. Maybe I need to get more up to date on my medical research. Maybe there's like a pseudo-drowning, or if you're only partially drowned, you...
Yeah, if you're only under for a minute or two.
I mean, typically, when you see someone drown and come back, it's because somebody is issuing CPR or, like, doing something. They just, like, throw him on the sand.
Yeah, and that's what I expected.
Wait.
Like, I expected them to be like, and now breathe again, king! And then someone wails on them into the chest with, like, a hammer or a staff or something like that. Like, you kind of expected this, like, Game of Thrones version of CPR, just whoomp, you know, and the guy spits out seawater. You're like, okay, well, he's back now.
But again, it is Game of Thrones, so everybody comes back from the dead.
Well, yeah. The thing that bothered me the most was how the king's moot went down. I realized that, you know, that Asha runs away with the ships, and that was important to have happen. So in order for that to happen, then I can't remember. Right. Euron has to win the king's moot. But basically... One guy was talking about it, and then they say they don't want Asha as a queen, and then they suggest Theon. So Theon's got this beat where he could try and steal this and try to get this, you know, machismo thing happening, but he stops.
You know,
he steps aside, and he backs his sister so that she can have the support of everybody. And she's almost got it. Like, there's people cheering, the people that have followed her into battle. They know that she's capable. She's got the support of her brother. Like, all the stuff is kind of coming and building.
Right.
And then Euron comes in and goes, here's my plan. I'm going to screw Daenerys, and we're going to team up, and we're going to win. Because I have a big dick. Like, it's just like, well, and then everybody's like, yeah, Euron, that's the guy we want to follow. It's like, wait, what?
Okay, so here's the other issue I had with this whole scene. You're bringing up the other thing, right? So there's this back and forth, and they're like, yay, you know, on either side, you know, and it seems like it could go either way. But then they obviously pick him, and then they go through the whole ceremony. He wakes up, and he's like, okay, where's Theon and you know, my niece? Because I can never remember her name. And, you know, they've taken off with, like, the entire fleet. Like, it's like 100 ships, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, everything.
And so, and I'm looking at around, and you look at the guys that run up the hill, and there's maybe 30 of them at best.
Yeah.
Right? Because 100 ships means, like, everybody else had to go with them to man those ships.
Right? Yeah.
So, who the heck voted for this guy as king? Like, 30 guys beat out the hundreds of others that just left and so obviously supported, what's her name?
It's Yara. I got Yara. It wrong. Yeah.
Obviously supported Yara. So why didn't they just all elect her king and, like, tell the other 30 guys to, like, go to hell?
Yeah. Yeah. And this is where I get to push up my book nerd glasses and say that the king's moot is not everybody. It's not public. It's the chiefs of families. It's the head of houses. It's a collection of.
This is where my knowledge. I haven't read the books.
Yeah.
So this is where that explains things to me.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah. And this is where I didn't get
that from the episode. Right.
No. And they didn't do it very well at all. Like they, I don't even remember a line that said something about, like, you know, all they had to say is, like, we have gathered the heads of all the families here to blah, 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 blah. And that would maybe have been enough. But yeah, they didn't speak to it at all. They didn't say how important it was, basically because they were outside.
And let's talk timelines. They've got to build now 1,000 ships. How long is that going to take?
Yeah, apparently not very long.
40 guys.
Yeah. Although, I mean, that brings up to me that, I'm quite curious as to what Yara is going to do now that she's got this fleet. Like, she can cause some serious trouble.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's, we were talking last week about potentially Daenerys not coming to Westeros to King's Landing, but coming via Dorne.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me wonder if, I don't know whether if Yara met up with Daenerys and tries to team up with her, whether Yara and her fleet are going to be the new fleet that gets Daenerys across the sea, or if when Yara meets Daenerys, there's going to be some friction there.
Right.
I don't know. But I feel like there could be some camaraderie because of the, like, two female leaders. Like, I'm hoping that that's the case.
But yeah, I don't know. Again, unless it's in the book, I don't know what the history between the houses are, or is there any?
Yeah, I don't remember the history. I mean, well, the Iron Islands joined.
They were always kind of the outsiders, right?
Yeah, they did. They fought against King's Landing when they threw the Targaryens out. When they overthrew the Mad King, the Iron Islands were fighting with Ned Stark and the Baratheons, and it was their
So they're obviously not historically not allies.
Not with the Targaryens, no.
Right.
No. Yeah.
So it may not go well.
Well, I mean, it's probably going to be Daenerys puffing up and, you know, flaring and all that kind of stuff until someone talks to her and says, like, look, you probably really need these ships. You might want to be nicer to her. Like, it's
right.
That kind of stuff. I feel like I'm remembering more boats in the book, and I'm wondering if maybe that does happen and I'm not remembering it right, because it's been an awful long time, and book 5 was really thick. So there's a lot of stuff I'm probably missing, but that's one.
And I thought this whole season was off book. Is it not?
Most of it is, from what I can tell. But there's still quite a bit of it that is on par. I feel like a lot of the Tyrion and Meereen stuff is in the books, and there's more that way more that's happened in book 4 and 5 that we've not seen. And I won't get into spoiler territory, but, like,
right. There's
stuff that we have not seen in the North that I'm really curious to see how that pans out, because it was super cool and very satisfying. So there's stuff like that, that, you know, we're sort of getting there, but we haven't quite, which is great. I mean, I like that they're not sticking so true to the books that it sacrifices a good television show. Like, it's still a really good show. They tend to, you know, go from where they're supposed to be. I like the lighter moments that they've been putting in this season too. At Castle Black, one of the things that sticks out is Tormund Giantsbane making eyes at Brienne. They've done it twice now, and The first time at the dinner table, like, oh yeah, that was pretty funny. But I cackled out loud when he's on the back of the horse looking at
her. There's an animated GIF of that floating around now.
So good.
Speaking of animated GIFs.
Yeah, it's just enough to kind of lighten the mood in the middle of a pretty serious show. But yeah, I really enjoy that.
She just rolls her eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's funny because like she spent her whole life not being attractive to guys because of her stature and what she wanted to do. And now the one thing that is attractive to this guy is power. You know, like he likes a good fighter. That's what he's looking for.
Right.
You know, I'm really curious to see where that relationship is.
Well, you know that's going to happen.
Yeah.
So at some point.
Yeah. No, I'm waiting for the buddy cop moment on the battlefield where they're just like, they're, you know, kicking tail together and just, you know, finding themselves being attracted to one another as they're hacking the enemy to pieces. Like, I feel like that's going to be a fun opportunity.
Right.
I wasn't sure how I felt about the whole Sansa Littlefinger thing. It was nice.
I thought it was great. Oh, I really enjoyed that because I am happy to see Sansa's finally becoming like this strong, you know, and God, she had to go through so much crap to get there, which really sucks. But
yep.
But yeah, the strength that she had, you know, and I thought her lines were great, you know. It's just like, you've come to my aid, you know, now, like, you a-hole, you know, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, because she has the backing of Brienne, she's really like toughening up and becoming this leader, and I think we're just seeing the start of it. So I can't wait to see how much further that goes.
Like, yeah, we saw
she's
a little
becoming
bit
a strong character.
Yeah,
she's always typically been kind of weak.
Oh yeah, very much so. And they we saw more of it in at the table when they were discussing their plans.
Right.
I can't remember exactly what she said, but John kind of gave her a look like that was pretty authoritative and a good idea. Like it just, you know, I think it was something about people won't follow John because he doesn't have the Stark name, and she says I do.
Right.
And you're like, oh right, you know, and so,
and I'm behind you and I'm with you. So
yeah no, I think it's well, because I think that we're gonna see a lot more of the female characters that have been under boot for most of the series kind of find their own. You know, Arya is starting to climb the ladder. Sansa's getting free of the, like, they're all leaving the girls behind, right? They're becoming.
And she lies to Jon too, which is another interesting aspect of that.
Yeah,
right?
And that's where I get concerned. It's like, that's where I'm a little disappointed. I mean, I understand that the good guys are not necessarily murdering people, and that's why she didn't tell Brienne to cut him in half, because man, that would have been
great to see
and and it takes away that dread, right? Because I mean, ultimately I feel like at some point, whether they trust him or not, they're going to be forced to be in a situation where they
need
have
him,
to trust him or they need him, and then
that's what he preys on, though. I mean, that's his character. I mean, that's how he's always survived.
But then but we're not talking about every other TV show where everybody walks away at the end. We're talking about Game of Thrones. So then you've got Littlefinger planning his own selfish end at the expense of John and Sansa. You're like, no, don't mess with it. We've already lost John once. Like, don't mess with this. So yeah, that to me is terrifying. I'm not exactly sure, you know, and if it's not Littlefinger, it'll be Robin, the boy wonder from,
God.
Yeah, it's been years and I still can't get the image of him at like age 10, suckling. Like I can't say anything else when I see this kid. And I think
that was intended.
Yeah. I mean, as an actor, I kind of feel like that's going to suck, you know, pardon the pun, your career to be like that guy. I don't know. If you're going to be typecast, I'd rather be typecast as Batman or, you know, something a little cooler than Robin of the Airy.
Heat sucker.
Yeah. Yeah. Not for me. But I really enjoyed all the stuff that was going on at Castle Black. I'm glad that we're on the move. I don't think we need to be yet. There's not as much happening at Castle Black anymore now that the wildlings are on this side.
Oh, speaking of another humor moment, John's friend, kind of second in command at Castle Black when John leaves. You know, scene where he's like, should we close the gate or whatever? And he says, I'm not the commander.
Yeah.
He's like, wait, close the gate.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I enjoyed that quite a bit.
It's like, you are. John just left you in charge. You're the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it Ed?
Is that his name?
It's either Ed or... it's a very short name.
I'm so terrible with names.
It's very odd how... Like, a lot of the main characters will have these very interesting kind of names, and then you get into the offshoot characters, and they'll have interesting names. But then these tertiary characters will have names like Ed or, you know, something a little bit more... It feels more modern, even though, I mean, Edward could easily be a name in this world, but calling him Ed is a little bit strange, right?
And I was just happy to have a whole episode without Ramsay.
Oh, no kidding. but then these tertiary characters, they become main focuses. They become the best friends of the main characters. They become,
right.
You know, they become the Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. And he's like, well, who's the Lord Commander? Ed is. Like, wait, right. Who?
Messed up his name.
You know, it's not Commander Mormont. It's Ed, Smith. Yeah, that guy, you know, like that kind of stuff is a little bit weird. I prefer these episodes, the last 2 weeks, they've focused on a handful of the stories that we are given, and they really give us some meaty stuff to watch. I much prefer that than 5 minutes with everybody. Because you're talking about No Ramsay this week.
Right. Yeah, so that was great.
Yeah. So like, I'd rather have none of it and then have a big chunk of Ramsay next week, as opposed to, like, you know, 5 minutes here and 5 minutes there. And like that, I find that hard to follow, because then there's so much, you know. We had a short scene with Daenerys where she discovers that Jorah's got grayscale and she forgives him for saving her life.
Yeah. So this is another thing I need explained from the books. Cause I mean, they've kind of touched on grayscale, you know, with a few characters, but I feel like I don't still understand exactly what it is or what it does to its victim or the person that gets it.
So from what I
mean, obviously the skin thing is the visual, you know, out sign, but I mean, what is the fate, the ultimate fate?
Yeah, so it essentially it doesn't kill you, but it makes you mad, like it drives you crazy.
Okay.
There is, I can't remember the name
of it. So it's not like a zombie. You're still alive.
Yeah, you're still alive and you're still
insane, and you've got this.
Yeah, and you're feral.
Sort of scale. So maybe kind of in some ways like rabies or something like that.
Yeah, very similar. You
go, like nuts.
Yeah, they look similar to the thing from the Fantastic Four.
Right.
They don't get all muscly. They become all scaled up. And like, you know, they've got like long fingernails, and they almost look like burnt wood at the end. Like everything is all crickly and charred. And I'm trying to remember the name of the islands. Tyrion. Well, no. when Jorah got bitten, he was defending Tyrion, and they were trying to get through these islands. It was some ruins, but that's where it's from. Like that's where it originated.
Right, yeah, no, and they were attacked by those guys. I remember that scene from last season.
Yeah.
Right? So, and is it not the same thing that Stannis' daughter had?
It is, but...
So how did they stop it in her? Is that through the Lord of Light and the red woman magic, or... Does that give hints that there's some sort of cure or some sort of way to stop it?
It's because they caught it early, I think. They stopped it. I think the Maesters stopped it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Maesters stopped it. It wasn't magic,
because that's
that's
the quest that Daenerys has now sent him on, right?
Is to find the cure, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there must be something.
Yeah, there either is something, or she's just giving him something to do. Like, she realizes that dismissing him, which is what she has to do...
Right, no, I got that. I got that part of it. But I think there's still hope for the characters, is what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, I don't know, because...
There may be a resolution there, because obviously, you know, with Stannis' daughter, there was some sort of way to stop it or cure it or at least stop it, it seems like.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if it's just like in Westeros, they have the treatments for it, and then in... Across the Narrow Sea, they don't. Like, I just because a lot of what you see across the Narrow Sea are not mm-hmm. not necessarily super high developed societies. I don't remember because that, see, with the Maesters, the Citadel is across the seas. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't remember exactly how Shireen, I think is her name, Stannis's daughter, didn't die from it. But I mean, she was still scarred by it. Like she, that was left for her. Like if Jorah is managed to be cured, depending on how far it gets before he is cured, he's going to have that the rest of his life. So I mean, he might have like a whole arm that's all grayscale.
Right.
You know, which could be, I mean, like, that would be kind of neat if no one knows that you're cured and you're running into battle, like, that you could have people running from you, you know, because they think that you've got grayscale. It'd be kind of a neat, you know, the grayscale knight or something, like kind of a different, you know, like his, the end that he reaches could be completely different. But yeah, I liked the scene with Daenerys. I thought it was a kind of a nice way to forgive Jorah, but then send him on his way. So he probably won't. I don't think we're going to see him much this season. I think that was kind of a way to,
right,
you know, get him away and have him fulfill his duties to save her. But then, because she gave him a mission, it's not, he's not as heartbroken because she's given him something to do. But yeah, I just I'm itching to see what's going to happen with the dragons now. Like, I mean, now that Tyrion has released them, and you know, I feel like we're getting precious few bits of information in that realm, so I'm curious as to what's going to happen when Daenerys finally gets back to Meereen and sees right. what's going on. I didn't really follow a whole lot of what was going on with Tyrion and the priestess. Like I know what he was trying to do, but I don't exactly know what Varys and the priestess were really kind of getting
what,
at.
What, like, what's the end game for the alliance?
Yeah.
Like, why do they need the priestesses?
Yeah, I'm not really sure what's going on there. I mean, that might
go back to the whole magic thing.
Mm, yeah, that's true. Because she was talking about what the person was doing with Varys' parts when he burned them in the flames and what, like...
Yeah.
But she never really explained. She just kind of, she put him on his heels, which takes a lot. And I guess the idea, I think, was just to kind of introduce her as a character not to be messed with, or a formidable character that we should keep our eyes on. So the next time that she's on the show and she's speaking, I'm going to be paying very close attention.
And another thing that I noticed, are they all called high priestesses? So is the Red Woman at the same level as this woman? I think it even said the first high priestess. So I'm wondering if she's even older than the Red Woman.
Maybe. Yeah, that could be true.
Because she has the same, you know, they have that same necklace.
Yeah.
Adornment that, you know, I guess keeps them young looking.
Yeah, the enchantment thing. Yeah, I'm not really sure. I mean, I'd be curious to see what would happen if we ever get Melisandre and this other chick in the same room.
So yeah, I'm kind of wondering if they're ranks, but I rewatched it before we came into the show, and I did notice when the guy introduces her in the room to Tyrion, he says the first high priestess of the, you know, order or whatever they are.
Interesting. So, and they've never really called Melisandre anything other than the Red Woman, the Red Witch. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't call her a high anything. They don't even call her a priestess, do they?
I don't know.
Yeah. And I guess maybe her order is just not so well known on Westeros. That could be it too. Mm-hmm. Right on. Well, do we have anything else before we wrap up the show? I don't really have anything else to add.
Not that I can think of from this episode.
No, I mean, it was still a very good episode. The end with Hodor and stuff, that was actually lasted quite a long time. It was a serious chunk of
big
the episode.
Chunk, yeah.
Yeah.
Probably about the last 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah. Oh, I know something that we did glaze over that I thought was really interesting is that the Children of the Forest actually made the White Walkers.
Oh yeah, that was a huge revelation in this episode.
To protect them from the First Men, like to protect nature and their mystics from men, they created the White Walkers, and now these things are going to destroy, you know, the world. But it's I'm not sure why the Children of the Forest, if they created them, I don't know why they lost control. So there's some background there that I want to find out too.
Oh yeah, how did they lose control, or did they ever think they were going to have control?
Yeah,
and it looked like the method was dragonglass again, which I found interesting too. So it's sort of dragonglass to create them and destroy them.
Maybe that's maybe that was the thing, is that back when there was lots of dragons, maybe the children of the forest knew that they could win. But then as the dragons, because man eventually, you know, tried to domesticate dragons and they all went away, that then the children of the forest lost their defense against the White Walkers. And then the White Walkers just kind of grew. I don't know, the whole White Walker thing reminds me of an ice age. Like, it reminds me of, like, every so often, the winters happens and it just, like, the glaciers come and then the glaciers go. Yeah, and then the world resets, right? I'm curious to see how that plays out. Like I said, I really enjoy episodes like this that give you some closure. There's definitely some emotional moments, but then they also ask a lot of questions. Like, they raise more questions than they answer.
Right.
But they give you something to chew on, though, and I'm looking forward to where the season is going. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Well, that brings us into the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by Tweaked Audio. If you go to tweakedaudio.com, you can check out the high-performance noise-reducing earbuds. Use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's tweakedaudio.com, and the code is TCC. I've got a quick pick this week. The artist's name is Melissa S. McCracken. Wicked name. She is a painter with synesthesia. I think that's how I pronounce it.
Synesthesia?
Synesthesia, yes, thank you.
Yeah.
So essentially, there's a video on her Facebook page. We'll have this linked. If you search for her, you'll find it right away. Look for art that's abstract and very colorful, and you've found the right artist. But there's a video from Great Big Story on March 22nd that does a really good job of explaining and showcasing what she's doing with her work. Basically, when she hears music and sound, she processes it in her brain as color. Mm-hmm. So she's been doing these paintings where she'll listen to Pink Floyd, or she'll listen to classical music or jazz, and she finds jazz the most colorful. So any of her classic jazz paintings are really bright and really, really vibrant. But on top of just that kind of cool, unique thing that she's got going on with the cross senses, her paintings are breathtaking. They sort of remind me of nebulas in space. Like, she usually has dark backgrounds and then she brings in very bold, bright colors. She's painting with oils and palette knives. And man, like, I mean, do yourself a favor and check out Melissa S. McCracken on Facebook. She's got a proper website as well, and all the links are in her profile. You can find her on Instagram and stuff like that. But yeah, I think her work is just gorgeous. It's out of my price range, unfortunately, but but man, there's some pieces that are available. And really, I mean, as an art investment, if you're someone that can afford like a really nice kind of 2-foot by 3-foot original painting, like the gallery, I think that sells her stuff was asking between $1,500 and $2,000. So, I mean, it's a working artist wage, but it's not something crazy, you know, like a famous painting would necessarily go for millions and stuff like that. But she's, yeah, they're just beautiful, beautiful pieces of work.
Cool.
Well, that wraps up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the CitadelCafe.com. Our mobile audio stream is provided by AlphaGeekRadio.com, and the music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com to tell me how many names I got wrong in Game of Thrones this week. Find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. Usually this is where I would also read some iTunes reviews, but I checked and we're all up to date. So if you would like to leave us a review on the iTunes store, it really helps other listeners find the podcast, and you're pretty much guaranteed to have it read right here on the show. Another way to support the show is via Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. Anything that you would like to help out with is very much appreciated. We operate on the value for value model. If you get value out of the show, then consider putting some value back in. It all goes towards software and hosting costs and stuff like that. I mean, we're coming up on episode 200 later on this summer, so we've got to store all that kind of stuff somewhere. And I want to give a special shout out to Lou Page for his support, both as a co-host and on Patreon. And earlier today, speaking of abstract art, in the Slack chat, which is something that, as a patron, you'll get access to, Lou was sharing some really cool work that his wife, Erica, was doing, also abstract painting. So if you're in the Slack, you get to have cool conversations about the stuff we talk about on the show, but also just really fun, random stuff that people contribute as well. As I mentioned at the top of the show, my name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com. If you are interested in the projects that I'm working on, check out forgepublishing.com. I started a publishing company a little while ago. I'm really ramping up towards a Kickstarter with Piper Thibodeau and her daily paintings. Just go to forgepublishing.com and sign up for the newsletter if you want, and you will be receiving all kinds of good information about the book, the Kickstarter, and when it's going to launch and all that kind of stuff in your inbox when the time comes. Follow me on Twitter at Joel Duggan. Adam, where can people find you and your work online?
Sure. I do a podcast called The MacCast. It's all about Apple stuff and technology related to Apple and iOS and all that fun, all those sorts of fun things. I am at MacCast.com, or you can find me at MacCast on Twitter.
MacCast was one of the very first podcasts that I listened to.
Cool. Yeah. I get that quite frequently now. I'm always humbled. I never know quite what to say. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And it's a great show. I encourage everybody to check it out. And remind me, how long have you been doing that?
11 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez. Well, congratulations.
I was one of the originals that started December 2004.
Wow. That's awesome. So you're coming up on 12.
Yeah, coming up on 12.
Jeez. You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap. But you can only pick two. Just make sure you hold the door.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.